Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
This is Agenda 21 Talk. The date is September the 13th, 2011. This is our September the 13th show. We only have one a year, and this is it for September the 13th. Welcome, everyone. We have our guest is Brother Gregory, and Shannon should be calling in about 5 minutes or so. But good evening, Brother Gregory.
Hello.
That's an unusual first name, Brother.
Yes, it is. I see. The name's Gregory Williams, but they started calling me Brother Gregory so much, and there's about four or five Gregory Williamses out there. So we started using it to distinguish me from them, but now there's three other Brother Gregories out there, so it's a popular name.
You get famous, people copycat you.
I don't know if they're doing that, but there's a lot of us out there, but I'm the only me.
All right. Well, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the air that we were going to have a show about maybe it's the end of Charlie Sewell's show, maybe 4 weeks ago. We're going to have a show on 501c3 corporation churches. I had a book by Peter Kershaw, I think his name is, or Kershaw. I don't remember because I don't have it in front of me. And then a buddy, Mark Coker, emailed me and said he could get you on the air and talk about it because you can't get these other people. So I guess it's kind of funny. I guess you're a second choice because you're available and these other people won't ever come on.
Well, Peter used to call me all the time and keep me on the phone for 2-3 hours at a time. I just don't charge as much as Peter does.
Okay. There you go. All right. So here's the situation, Brother Gregory. I want to start a church, and I want to have money. I want to be one of those televangelists. I want to have houses on the coast. And we're going to have Mark Coker as the preacher, and we want people to donate. But people won't give to God unless they can deduct it off their taxes. Sorry, God, that's just the way it is. And so to do that, we have to be a 501c3 corporation so people can deduct it from their taxes and we can get rich. So what's wrong with that picture?
Well, there's all kinds of things. The only one that I could kind of go along with, Mark Coker being the minister, but the rest of that stuff, I'm not really interested in helping you out. But the fact is, no church has to apply for a 501c3 status with the IRS in order to be tax exempt or to have your contributions considered tax exempt by the IRS. That's in their rules. Pamphlet 1828, I think it is. It's all covered thoroughly in our Body of Christ versus the Body of State, which is unlike some of the other people you might mention. Our stuff is online for free. And we quote the exact laws, the specific regulations in those laws. Even the form itself, I was in a church, my family would go to it kind of on a regular basis. My kids were all young in those days, and it was not a 501c3 church, and the minister who was invited in by the local people, we live way out in the middle of nowhere, so we had to kind of invite ministers from all over, and this one minister kept coming, and he came in one day with the 1023 form, and said we needed to fill this out in order to be a legitimate church. Of course, he picked the day to do that when I was out speaking in Missouri somewhere. But my 14-year-old daughter saw the form and flipped it over and read the instructions, and it says churches do not have to apply or fill out this form. Churches are automatically, this is the words in the IRS documentation, considered exempt, whether they apply or not. 508C1 says churches are mandatorily accepted from having to file. So
508, I couldn't remember it. I was thinking 512 or 509 or something. Couldn't remember.
508C1. And churches should memorize that before they memorize 501C3. So, but as far as wanting to get a church and get rich and all that other stuff, I'm probably not interested in helping you. So,
well,
I mean, I don't mind somebody being rich, but that's not the purpose of the church. So,
you can fool me the way some of these churches are doing and these people and televangelists and stuff. Why do you think everybody, well-meaning people, think you have to be a 501c3 corporation, which doesn't even mention churches anyway? I mean, 501c3 is a non-for-profit corporation.
Right.
Why do you think they have to be? Yeah. They think they have to be.
They think they have to be because a whole lot of lawyers and former ministers have been improperly educated. I've sat down and talked with some unique attorneys from time to time over the years in the course of writing some of our books. I introduced the Free Church Report to Herbert Titus, who's a pretty prominent attorney. He's the founding dean of law for Liberty University. He appears in front of the Supreme Court on a regular basis. And he and Bob Olson, another associate of his, were absolutely astounded that lawyers give such a stupid advice to churches to file a 1023. I should have pulled it up so I could read it to you. It won't take me long to find it. But churches...
While you're doing...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, while you're doing that, Shannon has come on, my partner. Hi, Shannon.
Hey, Don. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Glad you could make it.
Well, I thought I was going to be late. I'm kind of glad Brother Gregory's on with us tonight. I just had an interesting conversation with a gentleman. I won't call the denomination, but here in Alabama they are closing some of the smaller churches. And this individual would call me and was asking me some questions about what to do. They had filed a suit in court over it. And it seems that there's several other smaller churches that this large organization is trying to close.
Huh.
Their covering organization is trying to close them because they're not making enough money or something?
That's exactly what it is. They tried that on us about 4 years ago. They tried to close our church. And, of course, there wasn't but about nine of us going to this small, it's just a small little country church. And, they came in and claimed that they had, the authority to close, that they actually owned the church. And when I went and pulled the deed, it didn't say anything about this certain organization at all. And they're claiming that they don't have to have their name on the deed of the church, in other words, you're guilty by association is what their argument is. In other words, you participate in their organization. By doing that in their bylaws, you have turned all your property over to them.
Well, you know, I haven't looked at the paperwork on that, but I would tell you to stop associating with them.
That's exactly right. That's what most everybody is doing. If I call the name of the organization, it's a very big organization, and Don knows exactly who I'm talking about. So I'd rather not say over there who it is, but they're doing several churches that way, and it boils down to the fact that they're losing money. They've lost membership, and they're losing money, and the only way that they can recoup on it is to close on these smaller churches, and then they're selling the church property.
Right, right. Well, that would be that'd be worth fighting. I don't know about you.
Well, I actually stood up for our church, and when they realized that I wasn't going to back up, they dropped it and they went away. But this guy that called me had actually filed a lawsuit, and the judge had actually ruled in their favor. The judge saw right through it. He questioned why there weren't any signatures from this organization. Some of their representatives should have signed the deed. The judge questioned all that. In my opinion, I'm not a judge, but in my opinion, you know, we've got a term for that, and it's called fraud.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good term to use. Yeah, this is one of the big problems. The modern church, you know, we're throwing the term church around. The modern churches, for the most part, and I'm not an ear tickler, so I get to say this, and I don't really care what the name of the organization is. They have more in common with the Pharisees than they have in common with Christ.
Exactly.
And so somebody's moving sheep outside the door, and that's making dogs bark, so I went and shut that up so it didn't interfere with Rick. I didn't know if you were picking that up or not. But... the churches today, and this is, you know, I get into it really heavy. I've got 5 books out, and they're all related to the Bible and what was really going on in the days of Jesus Christ, the days of Moses, and the days of Abraham, because we're making the same mistakes in our society today that they made in Babylon, that they made in Haran and Ur and in Judea at the time of Christ. And the solution is Christ again. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's hard to believe.
You must be sarcastic because I don't believe you.
Yeah, no, we're exactly like it. Go ahead.
Yeah, we study history so that we'll know the future because that's the best way to know what people are going to do is know what they've done in the past because God knows they're doing it again. The fact is we can't change the course of history. We can change the course that we play in history, the part we play in history. And the Christians thrived the decline and fall of the Roman Empire because they weren't doing what the modern church is doing. And they were doing something completely different. And people are astounded. You know, it's all in the Bible, but we have so many preconceived notions. Just like those churches have the preconceived notion, well, I got to file a 1023 and become a 501c3 church. You know, in their own words, in our Body of Christ versus the Body of State, we quote, we know nobody's going to believe us, and we don't really want people to trust us. We want people to trust God. But here's what they say, the advantages and disadvantages of exemption under 501c3. And they say the main advantage under 501c3 is that the organization is generally spared federal taxation of its income. The disadvantage is they become strictly regulated. That should tell you right there what the problem is. So you don't want to file that 1023.
Even if the Bible says it.
Yeah, I think that if you really, like you were saying at the beginning, want to make lots of money, and have big screen TVs and be able to take jet set trips around the country, you should go register 501c3.
Well, there you go. See, I was right. All right. We're coming up on a break. You hear the music. So this is Agenda 21 Talk. It's September 13th, 2011, if you're listening on a podcast. And we'll talk with Brother Gregory some more, but the call-in number is 512-646-1984.
In the 80s, they did it to Reagan. A debt ceiling compromise. Democrats promising spending cuts, but delivering only tax hikes. The 90s brought more compromises, more broken promises, and more new taxes. This August, the next chapter will be written. A defining moment. $14 trillion in debt, millions unemployed, the dollar in decline. We know where they stand. But will our party's leaders repeat the mistakes of the past? Will they choose compromise or conviction? One candidate has always been true. Ron Paul, cut spending, balance the budget, no deals. Standing up to the Washington machine, guided by principle. Restore America Now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Welcome back, everyone, to Agenda 21 Talk. I think I introduced myself at the first. I'm Don. We've got Shannon on the phone, and Brother Gregory is our guest speaker. And we're talking about churches, 501c3, and we'll probably talk about a lot of other things before the night's over with. But, Brother Gregory, you had called up that document. You're going to not read all of it, but mention the pros and cons.
Right, the advantages and disadvantages of filing for the form you actually file is a 1023, and it's an IRS form. And as we said earlier, a church is automatically considered 501c3. And what you have to, whenever you're dealing in a legal setting, you guys know this, is that you have to listen to every single word that's used. There is a considerable difference between being considered 501c3 and being under 501c3. You're automatically, if you're a church, you're considered as if you to be treated as if you are 501c3, but there are no regulations and stipulations that are imposed upon you to be a church. They don't define a church, and so they can't undefine the church. They got a lot of criteria to help their poor employees figure out if they're dealing with a church or not, but they don't have any way of regulating what a church is. But if you file a 1023 and ask for a predetermination letter, you're literally asking the IRS to be your overseer. And now you will become strictly regulated. If you don't file, they say that you're automatically considered exempt and any donations to your church are tax deductible. And the church is mandatorily accepted from having to file. If you are not one of those 1020, you know, I actually had an attorney in the Midwest. I was calling him up about something else just to interview the attorney. And they said they noticed, they wrote me back and they said they noticed that I was not a registered 501c3 church. And I wrote them and I said, well, we don't need to be. But I thought it was interesting that they knew we weren't, because there's an actual list of all the 501c3 churches. Well, I got a client list of this particular law firm. It's a huge law firm in the Midwest. Colorado is the center. And half of their clients are not registered as 501c3 churches. That's an amazing thing. So they know darn well churches do not have to file 501c3. They're not strictly regulated if they don't. And they haven't asked the IRS to be their overseer. And the same way with incorporation. If a church incorporates, it just asks the Commerce Department to be the overseer of their church, which goes all the way up to, eventually, the Attorney General's office. So the Attorney General's office can come in and change who's your minister. That's the power that you've given them by incorporation.
What are some of the pros? That sounds like a con, a disadvantage. What are some of the advantages of being a 501c3?
You can get cheaper postal treatment. I don't know what the advantages are, but one of the, that's the thing is that that's about it. People live by fear today in America. That's one of the great motivators, and they're afraid that they might get in trouble. You get a letter from the IRS, and people are in an absolute panic. They're afraid of their government. They're afraid of the government agencies. And so that's why most of them get it, because they think they will have less to be afraid of. But it doesn't make any sense if you actually study it out. The attorneys that I will talk to and will talk to me say it's an absolute foolish thing to do. So I can't give you any advantages, except if you want to be that rich church, make lots of money, and be able to jet set around the country. Maybe that's an advantage.
What do you gain if you gain the world but lose your soul?
Even though we can tell churches how to organize themselves to be a church without filing these forms, and we go into great detail. We publish whole books about it, and they're all available in PDF on our website, hisholychurch.org. But our message and our mission is to get churches to conform to what Christ was telling the churches they should be. We're not interested in just getting them a proper tax deductible status, although churches should not be taxed. We're interested in the churches actually start doing what the early church was doing, because those people who had studied with Jesus Christ for years and years and became that early church were doing something completely different than I see in 90% of the churches, and I'm being generous here, that I come across in the world today.
We'll talk about that. Hold on a minute. We have a caller. So we'll go to the caller, Carlos from California. Hey, how's it going, Carlos?
Oh,
good evening. You're on. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I can barely hear you, but I'm going to talk loud, because hopefully if I'm too loud, just let me know.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to give my, I wanted to talk about foreclosure, because I have a special case. But since this gentleman is talking about the church, I've been there, and I think this is only my opinion. I'm not saying I'm right, but I have an irrevocable spendthrift trust. I hope he can chime on this. And I think this is the only thing that can get you out, get you in and not get you in trouble. That's what I'm trying to say, right? It's an irrevocable, discretionary, complex, expensive trust. This is what it is, right? Can he say something about it?
Now, are you talking about for a church?
No. It's not a church. It's just I'm an individual.
For an individual. Well, I could tell you a lot about trust, and of course, it's not always what you call the trust, it's how you write the trust. So I wouldn't want to make too much of a comment on any particular trust just based on its title. We've used the term, we have a number of trusts that we can set up for churches, each one for a different purpose that churches can use. But the church, ultimately, isn't a statutory trust in the sense of the trusts that are allowed to be created. Very interesting thing took place in the last decade is trust laws in every state I've come across have completely been revamped. And there is a semi-intelligent power that's revamping those trust laws because there's a certain uniformity you see in the rewriting of trust laws. And I see it in state after state after state. So a lot of things are changing in trust laws. We have a thing called sacred purpose trust, and the church can use that. That's one of them. And I've seen somebody take all of our paperwork, and they called it a sacred purpose trust, but they made one little tiny change in it, and it was no longer a sacred purpose trust. It was actually a sham trust. So, again, you'd have to read the details of that. Irrevocable trusts have lots of power. Complex trusts, you'd really want to read the details before I passed any kind of comment on about it. Simple trust is another simpler kind of thing to issue, but I can't give you any legal advice on trust. Sorry.
I understand.
But we have lots of articles on it and sham trust and what to watch out for. We list four or five different points that you want to check if somebody gives you a written trust. But
I understand, and I just wanted your opinion because I've been a trust guy since about 10 years, and I do believe in trust. Everything we do is a trust. Even the deed of trust. Which brings me to the foreclosure, but we'll talk about it later. Thank you, and I'll just call back again because I wanted to talk a little bit with this guy, Agenda 21, on my opinion about this institutional trustee, which I think we have a lot of power. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Carlos.
Thank you.
Yeah, Carlos is right about everything you do is a trust. You mail a letter, you create a trust. And I like to use that example. And the terms of the trust are pretty much on the letter itself, but also in the regulations of the Postal Department. But the postal carrier, he doesn't own the letter. He's holding it in trust. And,
That's a good point.
So you can see how that kind of works.
All right, hear the music. We're coming to a break. This is Agenda 21 Talk. And again, for those listening on the archive or podcast, make sure you got the right one. This is September 13th, 2011. And the call-in number, again, will be, you can call in, but we'll be talking to Brother Gregory about 501c3 corporations. Call-in number 512-646-1984.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers have concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Hold it right there, bucko. That photo was poorly lit, and your composition is all wrong. Those could be the last words you hear before police confiscate your camera. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with the scoop.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights. Say no to surveillance and keep your information to yourself. Privacy. It's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Police are detaining people for taking perfectly legal pictures. They've apparently become art critics with instructions to determine whether people's photos have, quote, apparent aesthetic value. The idea is to stop terrorists, though what a terrorist could do armed with just a camera is beyond me. One innocent photographer got stopped for taking pictures of a refinery in Long Beach, California. Another got a full pat-down for filming the outside of the courthouse. In addition to judging people's photos, cops are harassing anyone with a camera who doesn't look like, quote, a regular tourist. So next time you visit Long Beach, wear a big Hawaiian shirt and make sure your photos are gorgeous. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Yesterday, it was long ago. Jenny was so lovely, she was queen of my nights. There in the darkness with the radio playing low, and the secrets that we shared.
Welcome back to Agenda 21 Talk, where we're not talking about the Agenda 21 program from the United Nations. We're talking about our agenda for the 21st century, which is a good religious, biblical foundation to live your life. And with that in mind, Brother Gregory, tell us about, you mentioned that we're copying like the Pharisees, what's happened in the past. How, and you mentioned the early church. How did the early church worship? Now, they met in synagogues and in people's homes. So how did they worship?
Yeah, that word worship, we have an article up on that, too.
Before you answer, give your website. You've mentioned that several times.
HisHolyChurch.org. This all one word, HisHolyChurch.org. We have .info, and we have a number of other websites, but that's the best one to come in on. It's the most up-to-date. And there's a wealth of information there. We also have a network of people all across the country and in other countries as well that have been studying a lot of this material and can help people. Because you can get a little overwhelmed by the amount of information, because we get into a lot of detail about what that early church was doing. Give you just a little glimpse of the difference between what churches do today and our perspective of what Christ was talking about. Because I believe Christ and Moses were doing the same thing. They were actually setting people free. Pentecost was the second Exodus. When people were in the bondage in Egypt, they had to pay 20% of everything they earned to the government, and they called that slavery. Today, people pay 20, 30, 40, 50, 60% to the government, and they call it freedom. And I think that there's been a lot of 1984 doublespeak going on for quite some time. We don't seem to understand that Moses led the people out of that relationship with government and created a system that all the government was supported by free will offerings, which are repeated over and over again in the Old Testament, where they actually owned the land they lived on and were entitled to the milk and honey. If you're familiar with legal terms, that would be the beneficial interest. And they ran the government completely based on faith, hope, and charity. That's what Christ was preaching. We know Moses and Jesus Christ were in agreement, and according to Jesus Christ, the Pharisees were not in agreement with Moses. There's just a huge distortion. Part of it's language, but most of it's our preconceived notions when we go and study this. Most people don't know that Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven before Jesus Christ came along. Before John the Baptist was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven, Herod was sending missionaries all over the Roman Empire to baptize people into the kingdom of heaven. But his vision of the kingdom was much different. When you got baptized by Herod's ministers, they introduced you, they gave you a new Hebrew name, and wrote it down, the scribes wrote it down in their books, and you were expected to donate, by law, a portion of what you earned in the year for the support of the treasury in the temple that took care of the widows and orphans and needy of their society. It was a compelled offering, and it was called Corban. And Jesus said the Corban of the Pharisees made the word of God to none effect. The Corban of the Pharisees was a social security system to guarantee the needy would not be neglected in the daily ministration, but it was a compelled offering. Once you got that baptism of Herod and were signed up and got your little stone ID that had your Hebrew name on it, which is also a numerical value because all Hebrew letters have a numerical value, then you would show that at any temple you went to that was sponsored by Herod. If you had, you know, some sort of illness, you were blind or whatever, and they would take care of you according to statutory mandates. But if you failed to pay, men would come out to your house and arrest you and confiscate your property. John the Baptist comes along. He's baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven, but they say, well, how does this work, John? He says, if you got two coats and your neighbor doesn't have any, you share. Faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. That's absolutely the difference between what Christ was preaching and what the Pharisees were doing.
The taking tax is what was in one of the situations where they came to take the tax, and I guess as Peter said, they said, "Doesn't your master pay the tax?" And Peter said, "Well, yeah, he does." And Jesus blocked his path after they left. And he said, "What are you thinking, Peter? What were you thinking?" He had to go get the coin with the Caesar's image on it from the mouth of a fish.
Right.
Because they didn't carry coins with Jesus, with Caesar's image on it.
Right. Everybody always points out, well, wait a minute, the Christians were all paid taxes. Well, they paid taxes, absolutely. This is another thing. Your taxes went to the temple. The temple was a government building. It wasn't just a church. It was a government building. It's where you went to take care of the needy. And of course, you could go to your local synagogue, but the funds were all trickling through and up and down to the temple. The money changers were actually the porters of the temple. If you go into the Old Testament, they were called the porters of the temple, the gatekeepers. What they were doing is receiving funds from the people and putting them in the central treasury. Jesus had a great deal to talk about central treasuries. You know, the word Corban means sacrifice. In the Old Testament, there was a sacrifice that you made to help support the needs of your government and the needs of your society. And that was called a free will offering. It was called Corban. But by the time the Pharisees in 78 B.C., they had passed a statutory system that was this baptism where you signed up for a Social Security system, and now they had an entitlement to whatever you earned, a portion of whatever you earned, and they could increase it by statutory mandates because this was the unrighteous mammon. We talk about mammon. Mammon means entrusted wealth. And Jesus talks about an unrighteous mammon and a righteous mammon. Well, the unrighteous mammon is the Social Security system set up by Herod, which is really identical to the Social Security set up today in the United States.
They had a Ponzi scheme, too?
Yeah, it's kind of a Ponzi scheme. A lot of people say, well, I invest in this, and so therefore I have a right to money. Well, for one thing, Social Security is not really an entitlement as you think of it. It's not like a pension system. They don't have to give you any benefits at all. And we've got an article up on newswithyous.com that detail this out and explain how the system works and other articles on our own website that do the same. But the money you pay in today is to take care of the needy of today. That's your contribution. That's your Corban. That's your sacrifice. That's your worship offering. Your priests today are down at the Social Security Administration. That's who's taking care of you. When you got the baptism of Jesus Christ, which we see later on in John, anybody who got the baptism of Jesus Christ was cast out of the temple, according to the rules of the Pharisees. We see that with the story about the blind man who claimed that Christ had healed him, and they asked the parents, and the parents wouldn't answer because they knew they'd be kicked out of the system, their Social Security system, their Corban system, their access to the treasury through the temple, if they professed Jesus. So they said, well, my son's old enough to speak for himself, and he says, I have to profess Jesus because he healed my eyes. And they cast him out, and Jesus went looking for him. Anybody who was cast out, they had to have another system, and that's what the early church was. You look at the word religion in the Bible, it shows up five times. Four times it's talked about in a bad sense, the religion of the Pharisees. One time it talks about pure religion. What is it? It's how you take care of the needy of your society, you know, the widows and the orphans and the needy of your society, unspotted by the world. What does that mean, unspotted by the world? Well, the word world there's five different Greek words that are translated into the single English word world in the Bible. Which one did they put there? Did they put the one there that, according to many concordances, means a constitutional order or system of government? You're not to be looking to the government to take care of the needy of your society by compelled offering. You're supposed to do that by charity. Once you give the government the power to take from you, to take care of the needy of your society, you will end up with a society where people can be raped in the streets and nobody will do anything about it. you could live in a society where people will come and steal a church, and nobody will do anything about it because they've lost community. They've lost the concept that Christ and Moses both did, which was to love your neighbor. They don't love their neighbor. They love what they can get. They're looking for, you know, profits and benefits. And that's what people have sold their birthright, their right to dominion for benefits. And we've done it in 100 different ways. And this is, you know, one of the books we have is Covenants of the Gods. And it talks about the contractual nature of government. And we'll talk about it when we get back, maybe.
Yeah, hear the music coming up on a break. Time goes by fast. This is Agenda 21 Talk. Got Brother Gregory, Shannon still with us, and I'm here. I'm Don, and just having a good time tonight. Call in number 512-646-1984.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 1. John Doe number 2, and other accomplices. On the day of the bombing, nearly all of the witnesses that saw Tim McVeigh and the Ryder truck report that he was accompanied by other perpetrators. The FBI and federal prosecutors insist that Tim McVeigh alone delivered the Ryder truck bomb to the Murrah building and detonated it. The only witness the government produced to place McVeigh at the building that morning, Dana Bradley, who lost her children and one of her legs in the bombing, testified that she saw McVeigh with another man, the fabled John Doe number 2, exiting the Ryder truck. While at least 15 other witnesses claim to have seen McVeigh with other perpetrators the day of the bombing, no less than 226 witnesses placed him with other men in the days before the bombing, including when he rented the Ryder truck, and in some cases have positively identified the other perpetrators. For more information, please visit OKCBombingTruth.com.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Microplant Powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
Break, and I'll mention the date again just in case you're listening to an archive or podcast, September the 13th, 2011. This is Agenda 21 Talk. I'm Don, got Shannon and Brother Gregory. And we were talking, well, you know, different things. I guess we've covered the 501c3. You don't need to be. But what defines a church? How can a group of people, a dozen people, want to form a church? Like Shannon was talking about, a little country church. So how do they form a church to be, you know, recognized? And we have separation of church and state. So the state, the government cannot tell you what a church is or what your religion is, theoretically. So how do they form a church?
Well, you establish all things with two or more witnesses. That's a principle in law. That's a principle in the Old Testament. That's a principle in the New Testament. So you need two witnesses that recognizes that a third person is a minister of Christ, and you got a church. That's the basics of it. Now, a church, in the best definition of a church I've ever seen is in Black's Law Dictionary. Believe it or not, I don't know what it was in Black's Third. It was Black's all the way up to, I think even in Black's Ninth, or although by Black's Ninth, I think they were adding a few things, you know, a second part of the definition. That's how they creep in, by changing the meaning of words. But the first part of the definition was still pretty accurate. And I was going to pull it up here if I can really quick and read it. A church, in its most general sense, the religious society founded and established by Jesus Christ to receive, preserve, and propagate his doctrines and ordinances. A body or community of Christians under one form of government by the profession of one faith and the observance of the same rituals and ceremonies. And we go into great detail defining rituals and ceremonies. All governments have rituals and ceremonies, which is just the way in which you operate, basically. The way in which you deal with situations. So that's what a church is, and that's really the best definition. But in order for the world to see that that's what you have, you need two or more witnesses. I mean, you want to get married, you got to have two or more witnesses. All that stuff. We, in the book Covenants of the Gods, the last chapter is the body of Christ versus the body of state, and that deals with the fact that you don't need to file a 1023 with the IRS, and you don't need to incorporate. As a matter of fact, if you incorporate, you become a body of the state. So that any church that's incorporated isn't separate from the state. It's a corporation of the state. The church is the corporation of Christ, and of course we don't use the word corporation, you know, it's more of a commercial term, but it's, we call it the body of Christ, which is where we get the word corporation, corpus, meaning body. So the church has to be established by Christ, while corporations are established by the state. And just as, you know, we were talking earlier about church, a big church organization that was trying to take over a little tiny church and take its property away and sell it. Well, they were claiming that, you know, what they're probably going to eventually try to claim is that you are an unincorporated association because you associated with that bigger church. And the church is not an unincorporated association. It's the part of the body of Christ. So I recommend that any churches, you know, long before they get into trouble with these people, start to create a record that they're... their founder is Christ, not the Lutherans or the Methodists or the Pope or any of these other people. It's got to be Christ established their church. And they start bearing witness by saying, we believe that Christ has called this man to be a minister. And then you start setting a record, because you're, if you go into court, they're going to want to see prima facie evidence that there's a record that you're doing what you say you're doing. So that's, it's pretty simple, but again, we're trying to get people to conform to what that early church was doing, which wasn't just going to the pews and sitting there and listening to somebody talk for an hour and a half. They were actually taking care of the needy of their society. They were doing what Christ said. They weren't just sitting there in the pew loving their neighbor. They were actually getting out in the streets and in their homes and rolling up their sleeves and being there. If the churches were doing what the early church was doing back in 1916 and 1933 and 1957, and some of these dates where major changes were taking place in the American society, the people would have said, well, why would we want to sign up for Social Security? We go to church.
Yeah, you know? You can include today in that, because we're going through a tremendous change here in these
times. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's kind of like we've already jumped off the 50-story building and we're just approaching the sidewalk.
That's true. That's true.
But anyway, the thing is what I found and what I correlate in the books is that we've been doing this over and over again, century after century, millennium after millennium, because I don't find churches actually preaching the gospel of Christ, what Christ was saying to do. That loving your neighbor is not just having a good feeling about them on the weekend. That's actually, you know, Peter said, to covetousness they would make merchandise of you. For the desire of benefit at the expense of your neighbor, you will be made human resources. would be a paraphrase of that same statement. Because that's how they made you a human resource in Egypt. You wanted to be taken care of in a social welfare system by forcing your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. And what should have been for your welfare, as Paul and David says, has become a snare. And that's why we're in bondage in America today. You know, if you lived in Egypt, your income tax would be 20%. No higher. You make $1 million, 20%. You make $2 million, 20%. Why? Because that's one-fifth. And it's been that way since Joseph made the deal. But Joseph didn't make the deal for you guys in the United States or in Australia or Canada. So you don't have a ceiling limit like 20%. And
yeah,
now you find out you're in bondage and people are crying out and trying to find a solution. Well, the solution is the same as it's always been. It's Christ. It's what he said. It's the kingdom of God. It's the right to be ruled by God. And we can't just do that with a wave of our hand. We need to repent and turn around and do something different than what we've been doing for the last 20 years, 30 years, 60 years, 80 years in this country. You know,
amen,
we never
man.
Had a social welfare system in the United States. We had churches. You know?
That's true. And
if you go to
Isaiah
church today,
says, I'll take care of you and your hoary hairs and don't go with Bel and Nebo, who had a retirement system, just like you had described.
Right. Yeah, Rome, as it was falling under economic pressures, I mean, the similarities are unbelievable. They're staggering. We have a little pamphlet out, Rome versus Us, a book, Thy Kingdom Comes, and we cover it in that. But Rome took all the silver out of the Roman silver denarii. You know, it's kind of like they did back in 64. You don't need that silver anymore. They just kind of wave their hand and they take it away and everybody goes, oh, okay. But at the time of Christ, a sack of wheat cost you 6 denarii. That'd be about 6 dimes. The denarii was a little smaller than a dime. By the time Diocletian was emperor, it was 120,000 denarii for the same sack of wheat. Because there was no more silver in the denarii. And inflation had eventually caught up, so, I mean, it wasn't... Even the iron was worth more than a sack of wheat. A sack of wheat was, modius of wheat, about 30 pounds. And it was only 6 dimes at that time of Christ. Nero took out about 40% of the silver. Marcus Aurelius took out 10%. Nero took out about 40%. And shortly after that, there wasn't any more in it. They actually implemented universal health care in Rome. But they kept putting it on and taking it off. It was a big controversy. People were trying to get back to a republic in Rome. And along comes Christianity. Christians were not persecuted by Romans. Rome had the law that freedom of religion. They were persecuted because they were another government. You see it right there in the Bible. These are the ones who do contrary to the decrees of Caesar because they say there is another king.
That's right. They said Caesar's
a
man,
a government.
And it's not a deity, and we're not going to worship him or pay tribute.
Right. Well, you know, God, the word God, Paul says there are gods many. If you went into a Roman court at the time of Christ, you went into a Hebrew court at the time of Christ, you would address the judge Elohim. You look up in your Strong's Concordance, the word Elohim was used as in deference to magistrates and judges. That's what it means. It's even translated judge in the Old Testament in a few places. Because that's what Elohim means. It means ruling judge. Well, who's the ruling judge of your life? Is it God or is it man? Well, it's men if you make contracts with them. Contract makes the law. That's a maxim. And what does the Ten Commandments say? Make no covenants with them, nor with their gods, nor with their judges.
Correct.
And that's what they're doing, and that's what they've been doing. Now, you can't just get mad and make it all go away. You need to do what Moses was teaching the people to do. You need to do what Jesus Christ was teaching to do. And you actually need to do what Abraham was teaching them to do, because they were all teaching exactly the same thing. And it's in the text. But you have to you know, look at all things anew.
You do. You have to throw out all your preconceived notions, everything you were taught about, you know, what day to worship, what all the pre-trib rapture and all that stuff, and just read the Bible and you'll get a completely different take on it, different understanding. All right, you hear the music. This is coming up on a break. That's been a whole hour so far. Hard to believe. And so we've got another hour of Agenda 21 Talk with Brother Gregory. We'll be talking about churches. I think we all need to know this, especially in this time, day and age. It's so close to the end times of this first earth. We need to know this stuff. So, anyway, and the call-in number for the next hour, 512-646-1984. Are you still with us, Shannon?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. I figured you just listen. I'm listening to you. All right. We'll catch everybody after the break.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
Syrian security forces riding in vehicles mounted with machine guns raided neighborhoods outside Damascus before dawn Tuesday. The raids are the latest assault on dissent in Syria as the regime tries to crush an uprising against President Bashar Assad. The UN estimates the crackdown has killed 2,600 people since March.
Turkey's interior minister said Tuesday the nation is considering a military incursion by ground forces against Kurdish rebel bases operating in northern Iraq after recent attacks. Air and artillery strikes against the Kurdistan Workers' Party have been underway since August.
More than 1,600 union teachers in Tacoma, Washington, went on strike Tuesday, affecting 28,000 students. Teachers are accusing the Tacoma School District of seeking a contract that would leave teachers open to age, race, or gender discrimination. The two sides also disagree on how to deal with state cuts in funding for teacher pay, as well as class sizes. School officials Tuesday sought an injunction to force teachers back to work.
Senior British lawmaker John Whittingdale said Tuesday Rupert Murdoch's son, James, will be called to face a second grilling before UK legislators. James, CEO of News International, last appeared before Parliament along with his father on July 19th. At issue are discrepancies between Murdoch Jr.'s testimony and subsequent evidence given to the committee by former News of the World editor Colin Myler and former News International attorney Tom Crone. Last Tuesday, Crone and Myler both reiterated their prior assertions they consulted with James Murdoch about a settlement to Gordon Taylor, the footballer whose cell phone messages were hacked by a private investigator for News of the World. Taylor later received a settlement of $700,000. Among items discussed in the 2008 meeting over the settlement was an email showing phone hacking that the paper was widespread.
Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said recently Iran would release two U.S. citizens imprisoned for spying in a couple of days. A lawyer representing Shane Bauer and Josh Fatal said bail had been set at $500,000 each. A third American, Sarah Shud, was freed last September on $500,000 bail and returned home. Bauer, Fatal, and Shud said they were hiking in the mountains of northern Iraq when they crossed the unmarked border into Iran by mistake. Bauer and Fatal were convicted last August at a trial held behind closed doors. Evidence against the pair has never been made public. The affair has heightened tensions between Tehran and Washington, which severed diplomatic ties after the storming of the U.S. Embassy in the wake of the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
For more details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
Pick up where we left off. We were talking, I guess, Shannon had mentioned we're going to talk about the contracts and covenants. And I see on your hisholychurch.org you have a book called Covenant, Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions.
Right. It begins talking about the fact that the Constitution was a very unpopular document that was never put to a popular vote because they knew it would be voted down. That's just a matter of historical record. It was not legally ratified. Clark's Summary of U.S. American Law, one of the most predominant law books for an outline of law in the United States, clearly states that if the Constitution was not legally ratified, it required unanimous consent to change the Articles of Confederation. But it is here. And so, you know, we deal with it. Originally, the people were not a party to it. But now they are extremely a party to it. But I always ask people, did your rights come from the Constitution or did they come from God?
They came from really God. They're just written down in the Constitution.
There are rights that are written down in the Constitution, but they're not itemizing them for the purposes of God. They're itemizing them for the purposes of the Constitution. That's a corporate document. And I don't want to pick on the guys who wrote it. They were trying to figure out some kind of solution. They heard the debates. Anybody who wants to be a part of that constitutional system needs to realize that it has morphed considerably because it's an organic constitution. There's lots of amendments. One of the key elements, though, in the Constitution is your right to contract. And they will uphold that right. So it's all those little contracts that you've made with the federal government and the states have agreed to with the federal government that relinquishes your powers one by one. Now, you can't get rid of unalienable rights. They still exist. You have all your unalienable rights when you're in prison. You just don't have access to the use of them. But people have to also realize that rights are responsibilities. And if you don't keep the responsibility in your corner, you will lose access to the right. If you want your rights back, you need to take back your responsibilities. Our modern society doesn't exercise responsibility. It puts it in the hands of government in ways that were never intended by the forefathers. But then we go further on in the book and we point out that there's some guidelines for writing a constitution in the Bible back in Deuteronomy 17. And there were five things that were covered in there. And you need to know your Hebrew in order to see that they're there because they're playing fast and loose with that, but it's there. And one is your leader can't have treaty-making powers. Your leader, you know, he can't make contracts for you, like Agenda 21 contracts. He can't do that for you. You don't want him to have treaty-making powers. You don't want him to have a central treasury because then he could finance his own army, which it also says he can't have his own army. That's it says he can't raise horses, but in the Hebrew, that's really saying he can't have his own personal army. And today, government has huge personal armies, both, ones that wear green and ones that wear blue and ones that wear suits and ties. They have all kinds of armies out there. It also says, I can't remember the other one right now, it escapes me, but it's in the book. But one of the last things is he cannot be a foreigner. And they put that in there, but they evidently disregard. But those, they should have put all of those items in there. And the Bible tells us, why would you want a leader who can make contracts for you? Whether it was the president or the Congress, they shouldn't be able to make contracts for you. And if they can make treaties, they can make contracts for you. And you don't want to give them that power. Now, the power of the federal government has vastly grown. And most of that is because we're neglecting our responsibilities. They didn't take away our rights as much as we have neglected our responsibilities. You know, we could say back in 1776, unwarranted usurpations. But a lot of the problems today are not necessarily unwarranted usurpations. And all we have to do is go back, and I believe that that's what Christ was preaching, how to go back to taking back your responsibility. First you have to take care of yourself, then you have to take care of your neighbor. And we lay this out in extensive, information, just chock full of information in the covenants of the gods and contracts, covenants, and constitutions, so that you understand what course this nation is allowed to take because you created, during the break I mentioned Patrick Henry's reference to the Constitution because he fought against the Constitution. He said this document was written as if good men will take office. When bad men take office, they'll steal your rights to ambuscade. So you need to know how they can do that and how they can take your rights to ambuscade, how that can happen. And you need to read the anti-federalist papers to know what to guard against. And the fact is I think we're at a point now where it may all come down before we can build it back up again. And that's what I believe Christ was telling us how to do. That's what Moses was telling us how to do. And that's what Abraham was telling us how to do. And that's what we try to reveal to people in the books. But They're kind of iconoclastic.
Yeah. And God used the government, and like the Garden of Eden, had it set up. And then they decided to, like it best, it said there's a voting booth in the Garden of Eden. It was at the tree. And Adam and Eve voted on not following God's rules. But God is the government. And he has a definite setup of how we were made to work.
Right. So, one of the things we talked earlier in the show about trust, when God, I always ask people this, so when I did a tour, a 30-state tour earlier this spring, talking a lot of places, and I asked this kind of trick question, what's the first commandment of God in the Bible? And everybody, they go to the Ten Commandments. Well, the first commandment of God is to dress it and keep it. And that was back in the garden.
Seventh day.
And I tell you that when God gave us dominion, that was a trust. Because there were terms. That's one way you know that you have a trust, is there are terms of the trust. Here is this property, and here are the terms. Dress it and keep it. You it says in the Bible one place, and they translate it, woe unto those who despise government. But the actual word there, they translate government. They don't translate government anywhere else in the Bible. They translate it dominion. Woe unto those who despise dominion. Those who will give up their right to the dominion over the land to another agency or corporation or government or big church. woe unto them. God wants you to be responsible. You talk about the milk and honey. Legal title. We cover this in Covenants of the Gods. I think your listeners would like this. Legal title in the definition, which is hard to find in some dictionaries, legal dictionaries, but this is in Black's Third. legal title is an apparent title that carries with it no beneficial interest. What do you mean? My legal title doesn't include beneficial interest? What is beneficial interest? The right to use the property. It's also called beneficial use. You mean if I have legal title, I pay $400,000 to get legal title to this property and I don't have the right to use it? Well, of course you don't. That's why you have to pay a use tax. And they call that property tax.
Yep.
You don't own it, you rent it. And the use of that can be highly regulated by the government because you only have a legal title. You don't have true and actual title. How did that come about? Well, these are things I had to cover in other chapters. But the point is, you're not entitled to the benefits, profits, or use of the property simply because you have legal title. And if you stop paying your taxes, they're going to take the whole property away from you. In many states, they'll sell it and not give you a dime of that profit. They'll make a profit way over what they would have made in taxes if they had collected the taxes. And they'll keep every bit of it in many states. Some states, they'll refund what's left over after administrative expenses, which will be far less than is just. But that's the way they do it. And we were actually finding widows that were being robbed because their husbands died and they owned property and they stopped paying the taxes. And the widow didn't know about the property, and so the state eventually confiscated the property. Usually the widow moved, so they were sending notices, but she wasn't getting them because the Postal Department will only send them for 6 months. And so they confiscated, $400,000 worth of property that she could have sold and had money. She's living in a trailer down in Florida, a particular case. And we find that the state has all this money. If nobody claims it within so many years, they just keep it. The county holds it first, and then the state keeps it. And we find it, and we get the money for her. And but now the states realize they make it hard for you to find out who really should be getting that money because they want it to go in their treasuries. They're robbing widows and orphans. And the citizens are going to church and praying while their government is robbing widows and orphans. And I could give you, I could cite case after case after case where this happened. What does Jesus call the weightier matters? It says it right there in the Bible. It's in everybody's King James Bible and most of the other NIVs. Jesus talks about this to the Pharisees. They should have been attending to the weightier matters. I asked this in a room full of pastors. Whole room full of pastors said, what did Jesus call the weightier matters? They couldn't name one of them. One of them they couldn't name. What's the first one? Law. That's what Jesus named as the weightier matters. But we all know, we go to church, the law has been done away with. That's what they tell us. But that's not what Jesus said at all. Mm-hmm. They're misinterpreting a couple little quotes from Paul. Out of context, and we're not attending to the law. People are being robbed by courts. People are being robbed by governments, and nobody does anything about it. They all go to church and think they're worshiping because they really had a good song fest today. Jesus is going to come and say, you workers of iniquity, get ye from me. You didn't care about the widows and orphans and those people being robbed. That's the kind of preacher I am. I don't tickle your ears.
All right, we'll get into what a church should be teaching after the break. This is Agenda 21 Talk Out. Brother Gregory, Shannon, I'm Don. And call in number 512-646-1984.
Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details.
As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCoinAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
If you entered into a mortgage agreement after the year 2000, you were subjected to the largest fraud ever perpetrated on the American public. The banks plotted not only to steal the equity in your home, they also planned to scam you out of your retirement funds and leave you homeless and penniless. The money changers have used what they stole from you to buy your legislators, government oversight agencies, and most unfortunately, the courts. If you have been foreclosed on, are facing foreclosure, or are up to date on your payments, there is something you can do to set things to right. Call 855-588-8501, and we will show you how to force the corrupt courts to do their jobs. You can stop these thieving bankers from destroying this country and from forcing your children and grandchildren onto the streets as slaves to them. Call 855-588-8501 now.
Welcome back. This is Agenda 21 Talk on this Tuesday, September the 13th, 2011. And we're all in trouble now. Beth has called in. Beth from Alabama. How you doing tonight, Beth?
Just fine. Hi, Don. I had a question for your guest speaker there. It's kind of a three-part question, and I'm sort of going to put him on the spot. But I would like him to know that, of course, you know, Don, that I've been working with our whole group here in North Alabama to fight against corrupt government at all sorts of levels, every level there is. We've had some success and some failures, of course, but and I agree 100% that 501c3 is a very bad system for any church group to sign up under. It's totally disastrous. I also think that the only really good, I know that the only really good, and I mean good in its best sense, government has to have God as its head. Otherwise, it will fail because man is basically corrupt. So considering the state of our country today, do you believe that this is part A, do you believe it's possible for the people to restore the nation to its original system of, as a federal republic? And B, if you believe it is possible, how do we do it? And C, considering what the consequences might be, would it be worth it?
That's a very interesting three-part question. And of course, I'll beat around the bush, but I think I'll answer it. originally, Rome was a republic.
Right.
By the time, 500 years after it formed, it kicked out the Tarquinian kings and became a republic. It was not a pure republic, but it was pretty darn close to it. It had no paid military. It was all militias. All volunteer armies supported by local congregations of 10 families. It was, and those 10 families elected somebody, and he elected, and he got together with others and elected others, and eventually you've got the old men, the Senate. The Senate couldn't make new laws. It was a pretty close to pure republic, and it was actually designed after the earlier republic called Israel. Because they knew all about that. They knew all about Israel.
Right.
And they were very well educated. You know, we have this idea of these old primitive people. They knew more about the law in Rome than Americans do today. Of course, Americans in 1776, everybody read law books. One of the books they also read back then that came out then was The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire,
mm-hmm.
which is what we're seeing today, the decline and fall of
the
United States Empire, because it's gone from being a republic to becoming an indirect democracy and an indirect federal democracy and a socialist state. And then, you know, in the book Higher Liberty, which is another book we have out, which is our started as an expose on Romans 13. I do a little piece on democracy. We covered it in several other books as well. But this one, I looked up everybody who talked about democracy as a good thing and a bad thing. And I couldn't find any early Americans that really talked about democracy as a good thing.
No, they all
but
understood it was not.
I did find that Karl Marx thought democracy was great. Because it led to socialism, which led to communism.
So I have a friend who uses that as a tagline.
Back to Christ, as I said, was forming a government.
Right.
Based on faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. That's what it says in the book. According to Gibbons, who wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire and knew more about the early church, didn't think too much of the church at his time, but really liked the early church and referred to it as a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire,
mm-hmm.
an ever-increasing state. Now, this was the early church. Now,
right.
This is not the Church of Constantine. This is what the early church was doing.
Mm-hmm.
The church got in trouble in Ephesus, where they were accused of robbing the temple at Ephesus. Well, what was Ephesus? Ephesus was the place of the World Bank of its day. It had the biggest and the strongest and most secure vault in all the Mediterranean because it was the underwriter insurance company for all the social welfare systems throughout the Pax Romana. And they accused the Christians of robbing the temple at Ephesus. Christ was recognized by Rome through Pontius Pilate as the rightful king of Judea.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus would not force people into his kingdom. There was a split here. The Pharisees continued to work in the temple, collecting their forced contributions. The apostles worked in the temple, collecting the taxes of the people, but they didn't force them. They were free will offering. If you couldn't pay, forgiven anyway, because that's the way Christ said it had to be in his government. He says, I appoint unto you a kingdom as my Father appointed unto me. He's declared as king at birth. He's declared a king when he comes into Jerusalem. He's declared a king by Rome, who was there for the purpose of deciding who was going to be the king in Jerusalem. And he was king, and he says, these are my ministers. These are my apostles. Apostolos is the Greek word for ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
They were a government.
Right.
They were a republic. And in a pure republic, when you elect your minister, you elect a titular minister. When I say that people now go, their priests are at the social welfare office, that's where they are going for their social welfare. If you want to restore the republic, take back your responsibilities. Start creating churches that set the table of the Lord, which provides for the needy of your society through faith, hope, and charity. What's about to happen, if history continues to repeat itself, is you're going to see all these benefit programs squeezing people more and more. Social Security payments won't be enough to get the old people through. Your health care won't work. It'll get worse and worse and worse and worse. And runaway inflation will make buying bread almost impossible. If you read, and we cover this, in 150 A.D., when Rome was going through terrible famines because they couldn't get bread on the table of the people, they had their welfare system, but they were failing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to see in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are going to be upset and rioting.
Right.
Bess, what was your part B?
Say again?
Beth has a three-part question. What's the second part?
Well, I thought those were the three parts that you gave there. Can we restore the republic, and is it worth it?
You've done a good job of answering part A. You said that the way to restore it, if we're able to do it, is to create churches that support its own. And
right,
the only thing
right. And the early church, and we cover this in Higher Liberty, the early churches in America were called embryonic republics.
Yes.
And so people don't know what a republic is. They think it's an indirect democracy. That's not, and I'll tell you this, here's the controversy. You put me on the spot here. I'll put my neck way out there, and we may not have time for me to prove this. But the United States federal government was a government created separate outside of the state. You guys will probably agree to that.
Yes, sir.
the states were as foreign to each other as Mexico is to Canada. And I'm quoting law books here. I'm not just making this stuff
up. That's true.
I'm not going to give you the footnotes on all of it, or we'll be here all night, but it's in the book. But the point is the United States federal government was never a republic. The republics were the states. The United States federal government is exactly what it says it is. It's a federal government, and it's an indirect democracy. Right. It was created to guarantee a republican form of government for the states, to protect the states. Well, it hasn't done that since the Civil War. You know, it's like somebody asked me, do you believe in capitalism? I says, well, we haven't had capitalism in this country since 1913. Mm-hmm. We've had deadism. You don't have any capital.
That's all true.
Right.
So anyway, what I'm saying is we have to get back to those embryonic republics on an individual basis. Most of the people in the United States today are not going to go towards the republic, the same way it was in Rome. Most of the people want the free bread and circuses.
Right.
Most of the people want the welfare.
Right.
78% of the people in my county get a government check. They're not all employed by the government. A lot of them are, but they get a government check. 50% of the people in the state of Oregon get a government check.
Right.
So what else? You got another question to answer? Another part? Did he get all three parts? Did you ask?
He got all three parts. You did a good job. I appreciate that.
Okay, I kind of talk over, but I know you only got 2 hours.
I know.
Right now, we only got 30 minutes left.
I told you I said I could do 2 hours standing on my head. We haven't even scratched the surface yet, but we're having fun, so that's all that counts. So.
Right. Yeah. You know, you did a good job.
We're about to come on a break. You're welcome to hold on, Bess. We've got another question. We sure appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to make it as a nation, but you know, at least we'll keep fighting.
Well, I'll talk about that when we get back.
Okay, we'll turn into something. Well, so hold on the line, Bess, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. This is Agenda 21 Talk, and we are streaming. I haven't said this yet. We're streaming on ruleoflawradio.com, a great website. Lots of good stuff there. Go to it, ruleoflawradio.com.
Top 10 reasons to question the official story of the Oklahoma City bombing. Reason number 10. What is on the surveillance tapes? There were many video surveillance cameras that recorded the morning of the bombing, yet the few of these that have been released do not show what transpired with the Ryder truck at the Murrah Building. Most recently, the government has claimed that all of the cameras that were in different buildings and maintained by different businesses were all having their tapes changed at the exact same time, 9:02 a.m. This is insulting to the memory of those who perished in the bombing. What is being hidden from us? For more information, please go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
When two-bit dictators feel threatened, their standard tactic is to shut down lines of communication. You probably know it's been done in Egypt, but can you guess where else it's happened? I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with the unsettling answer.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy. It's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
When Bay Area Rapid Transit or BART police shot and killed a man named Charles Blair Hill for allegedly approaching officers with a knife, a 200-person protest followed. Understandably, in my opinion, since Hill was not the first person to be fatally shot by trigger-happy BART police. A few days later, transit officials got wind that a second protest was being planned, so they took the extraordinary step of shutting down all cell phone service to the station. Protesters and commuters alike found themselves in a cell phone dead zone with no internet, no text messages, no dial tone, no nothing. I'm guessing Hosni Mubarak would be proud. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
come back to Agenda 21 Talk. I've got 30 minutes of the show left. Call in number 512-646-1984. And we have Beth on the line. We'll go back to Beth. And, hey, Beth, you got any more questions? You want to put them on the spot again? Ask them a tough question.
No, not really. I think you did a good job of answering the question. And just that I wonder, do you think that it's worth it if we started such churches? And I don't know. Honestly, I think we would incur the wrath of the government just like Jesus did in his day. This time it would be the wrath of the government. But I just don't see how people would be willing to do that, because they're so indoctrinated into thinking that the 501c3 status protects them from the IRS. I mean, if you believe that, then how do you motivate people to want to even start a proper church?
Well, I've been at this for a long time, and you can't really motivate people. Christ has to motivate them. Christ has to work in their hearts.
Yeah.
The fact is a nation is a people. And that's why I read that definition of, the church. It's under one form of government. It's the people. I can't get people out of the bondage of Egypt that they're in right now, but I can't get them out of the unrighteous mammon. But I believe if history continues to repeat itself, they will give you, and I've actually seen this already in Ron Paul presentation where he mentioned opting out, and it was just a standing ovation. The reality is, I think they will give us an opportunity to opt out eventually, but we're not ready. When Moses came and he said, "Let my people go," they still had to pay their tally of bricks, but they started gleaning in the field at night for their straw. Those are metaphors for paying their income tax, but getting their benefits in the field, that's where the people live, through gleaning, which is a charitable event. We have to learn to take care of ourselves. This system will collapse.
Mm-hmm.
We see that. You can look at it economically. You can look at it politically, corruption-wise. But there are a number of other factors that are going to come into this, everything from geology. Jesus said, look for signs in the sun. There's going to be major changes in the world. The thing is, like I said, we can't change the course of history. The federal government will come down. What I'm trying to do, God so loved the world, and the word they used there for world was constitutional order or system of government. And that's what they're saying. He so loved the government of Rome, which had been a republic, and many of the people were trying to get back to that republic, that he gave his only begotten son that they might be saved, including the Judeans and everybody else. But they got to go that way. They have to go that way of faith, hope, and charity, caring about their neighbor. If we got 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 people in America that actually cared about their neighbor's rights as much as they cared about their own, cared about their neighbor's children as much as they cared about their own, that would become a viable force. All we're preaching, we're not telling people to come out of the system. We're saying seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. It's not righteous to covet your neighbor's goods. It's righteous to set the table of the Lord and start taking care of one another. You can do it better. You can do it cheaper. And we've got Thessalonians. You don't work, you don't eat. If you can work, you should work. You know, I've got another book coming out about that. But that's not ready yet. I work for a living. I do manual labor, and I could do a lot of other things, but I my status is different than most people's status. But we write these books in my spare time, whatever that means. But I think that if people who have a lot of the people, I call them kingdom tracks, they start looking, they homeschool. They're interested in home health, the natural health. They're interested in justice. They see corruption and it bothers them. They see their neighbor in trouble and they go to them. Those are kingdom tracks. Those people need, and they have ears for the gospel of the kingdom. And
now,
there's just no preachers out there preaching it.
Amen.
Yeah. There's no preachers, hardly any teaching health messages. Moses had a health message.
Absolutely.
Don't eat it. If it doesn't have cloven hooves and chew the cud, don't eat it, type of thing. So, yeah, that's a, I'm glad you mentioned that health message.
Well, you know, his, if you understood the history at the time of Canaan, you know, when they were cast out of Egypt, they were still in Egypt when they were in Sinai, because the Egyptian jurisdiction went all the way to Canaan. Canaan was actually paying tribute at that time to Egypt. What they were not in is the persona jurisdiction they had been in before. They couldn't call on the military outpost of Egypt to protect them if Malachites and Amalekites came after them. But they were developing a superior system, and that was because they were operating by faith, hope, and charity. They were taking care of one another. They were learning to care about their neighbor as much as themselves. I mean, Moses said, love thy neighbor as thyself. Our image of Moses is mostly drawn today by the Pharisees, who didn't understand who he was and what he was doing. But they came into Canaan with a superior system. Canaan was racked with parasitical diseases that came from eating pork that was not properly cooked or preserved. Pigs were everywhere. Just recently, I know of one doctor in Los Angeles who removed 3 tapeworms from different people because they were lodged in their brains. He's a brain surgeon. And they were in there because they were eating poorly cooked pork, improperly handled by people who didn't wash their hands. Those are basic fundamental laws. Moses said you got to wash your hands. Don't eat pork. Don't raise pork and waterfowl. Every single flu virus you get comes from northern China because they raise pork and waterfowl in conjunction with each other. If a duck dies, the pig eats them. And eventually the flu viruses that begin in the bird get transmitted to the pig and then jump to the human. It's common sense. It's practical. Those laws aren't magical. They make sense. All the fish and crustaceans you're not supposed to eat are bottom feeders, full of toxins. He says, don't eat those, because you're going to get toxins in your body.
You bet. I agree with you. That's the guy who made us told us not to do that, and that's the reason.
Yeah.
It's a manual for life.
Right.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that Southerners have to give up fried catfish?
I'm not making it a religious mandate. I'm saying that bottom feeders can accumulate toxins. If you're going to go fishing, don't go fishing for catfish in the Mississippi because the bottom is full of toxins. But, you know, there's a common sense approach to it. It's not magical. You know, it's usually not one thing you eat that poisons you. It's all those things you eat every, you know. You can go to McDonald's and eat there if you want, but you're probably going to pick up more toxins there than eating a catfish once in a while.
Yeah. And in Genesis, it's the very first food he gives us was basically fruits, nuts, berries. It wasn't meat. It was all vegetable stuff. And then after Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, he made us eat vegetables, the fruit of the field, or I forgot what the phrase is.
Yeah,
but
right.
Added that to the diet.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn about diet. I don't want to make it a paranoid religious thing, but those people who are starting to think about what you put in your mouth and start thinking, you know, I need to pay attention to this more because the world's poisoning you. GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
GMOs are one of the most dangerous and deadly thing that is facing America today.
You're right.
That is playing with absolute dynamite. You're going to see plague coming from that.
Yeah.
That is a total crime going on today. We have, in our network, we encourage people to grow their own seeds, not just for themselves, but to trade with other congregations.
Yeah.
And we call them seed savers. And grow food, restore the soil with the proper minerals and nutrients. Food is a medicine, but it can also be a poison. And so it...
Absolutely.
You got a basic outline in the Bible about these, with some of these simple things like, you know, eating the bottom feeders and stuff. But it was all practical, common sense stuff that he laid out for them to understand. Same way with the laws of Moses, the statutes of Moses. He was giving them guidelines. The law was decided by fact. The fact and laws were decided by local juries. through their congregations of 10 men and a minister and his minister. There's your 12-man jury.
Mm-hmm.
The cities of refuge were simply appeals courts to the Levites who were up this chain of not hierarchy, but servants. They were picking the best servants of servants of servants. And they could acquit. And when they became corrupt, instead of dealing with that corruption in the way that Moses said to deal with it, they wanted a king. And if you read Common Sense, they quote Samuel 8, if you go this way, if you elect a chief executive officer who can be your commander in chief, this is what's going to happen. He's going to make his instruments of war. He's going to take your sons and daughters. He's going to take and take and take and take.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we're
that's
at
true.
Today.
That's right.
Yep. Bible's a manual for life, and it's proved over and over again.
Well, I hear the music there. I'll go ahead and get off and give someone else a chance to call in if they want to, but you've got a lot of good points there. And I
okay, God
thanks
bless.
Thanks for calling in, Beth. And we'll see you on the Sabbath. All right, this is Gen 21 Talk. Last segment of the show. Call in number 512-646-1984, and hope to hear from you.
Hey, did you hear? Ron Paul has announced he's running for president in 2012.
It is Ron Paul.
Really? Okay, put down the cell phone for 1 minute. Your friends really don't care about your Twitter updates on what you had for breakfast.
Oh, but I love to make those little smiley faces with punctuation marks.
Of course you do. Now listen closely. You need to go down to Brave New Books and learn as much as you can about Ron Paul and his message before it's too late. They have all of his books and many of the books he talks about. They also have t-shirts, bumper stickers, and yard signs so that you can show your support for him during the campaign.
Brave New Books? Do they have Harry Potter and Twilight?
No, but they do carry a large selection of survival and preparedness books to protect your family in time of emergency.
That sounds like that show on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, there's even a wilderness survival expert that teaches classes called Earth Skills School that you can sign up for on the website bravenewbookstore.com. What are you doing?
I'm tweeting all my friends that they should go to bravenewbookstore.com or down to the bookstore in person. Where's it located?
1904 Guadalupe Street.
There, it's sent. I even made a smiley face.
Great.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with Jurisdictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. Jurisdictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Like yesterday, it was long ago. Jenny was so lovely, she was the queen of my night.
Welcome back to the last segment of this Tuesday's Agenda 21 talk show. We got a couple callers, so we'll just go straight to them. We have hold on a second. We have David Ray from Missouri. Hey David, how you doing?
I am doing fine. And well, some of it's a little slow. We didn't catch the website that he mentioned or even the name of the book he keeps talking about.
Okay, his website is hisholychurch.org.
Hisholychurch.org.
And our producer was telling me to plug it more.
Yeah, we were scolded during the break.
Probably my fault. And the book?
Okay. I appreciate it. And what was the other question,
The first book is Covenants of the Gods, which is 15 chapters of the contractual nature of government. It goes from holy matrimony, money versus mammon, law versus legal, and finally body of Christ versus the body of the state. And that, again, they're in PDF format on the website, and they're in HTML. That one's got probably 16 hours of audio associated with the different chapters. It's all available there for free. The second book is Thy Kingdom Come, and that's more of a narrative with a lot of historical references of the kingdom of God from about Abraham up to about 300 A.D. And it's telling you how and what that kingdom of God looks like, how it works, why we haven't been preached it and explained it. There's hundreds of footnotes in each of these books. The Free Church Report, that's the one that starts talking about how the early church operated in and how it can operate today in relationship to modern laws. Then there's some smaller books. Higher Liberty deals with Romans 13. And the other one is Contracts, Covenants, and Constitution. Talks about the Constitution and the flaws of the Constitution, what we should be looking out for, and a little bit into what went wrong and why we're in such a mess. But each of these books complement different things, and they were written because people keep asking questions, and we try to answer them in the book in great detail. Romans 13 is a very interesting subject. Did you have another question? I know there's another caller, and we have a limited amount of time.
I'll get off, but these are all available on your site?
They're all available on the site. You can go to hisholychurch.org. /outline, and it should take you to an outline of the site, and you'll see hundreds of articles, audios. The PDF book, you usually can get that by joining the Living Network, and there'll be somebody in your area. They're actually having a retreat. You're in Missouri?
Yes, I'm in Missouri.
Yeah, well, they're having a retreat there in Missouri in the fall here, simultaneous with ours out here on the West Coast, for those people who can't make it all the way across. But there's people on the Living Network that can help you find all the stuff. And there's a huge amount of stuff on that website. And so they'll help you, and they'll help explain. And you can actually probably meet some of the people that have been studying, and they can help you.
Yeah,
that's what it's about, helping each other.
I don't have any in my area to study the stuff, you know?
Well, that's why we created the Living Network,
groups
to find those people.
Right.
The more radio stations I get onto, if people contact me, we try to put them in contact with local people. You can't do this with email. You got to meet people face to face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we're trying to find, the lost sheep.
Well, I'll get out of the way of the next caller. So,
okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling, David. And, yeah, you can email us, too. Our email address is admin, A-D-M-I-N, at agenda21talk.com. And if you can't get on his website, I'll give you his email address, if that's okay, Brother Gregory, and
sure,
they can contact you. All right, we'll go to Sammy from Georgia. Good evening, Sammy.
Hey, guys. Long time no speak.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Sam.
Yeah, well, I joined late, but think the guy's probably right up my alley. You can imagine, being from New Orleans, how I'm a real fan of the shellfish, but I've come to some revelations recently about that as well. But my whole thing is, while I'm not going to advocate a complete vegetarian or vegan diet, I do advocate the commercial meat processing, you know, with the stark terror that animals go through when they're about to meet their demise. And I was just wondering if he had any comments about that.
Well, a lot of people don't know this, although more you read about me and stuff like that. The site's not about me. There's a little bit blurb in there about me. But I am a shepherd in the desert. And I left the study of law, I was originally studying to be a priest in the Catholic Church under the auspices of the Vatican. I have a long history of all this stuff. That's why I know Greek and Hebrew, although I will reteach you Hebrew because nobody teaches it right. But I am an actual physical shepherd, and we raise sheep and cattle out here in the desert, in very small flocks, but because we're very poor people. But
obtain your wares.
the meat, you know, there's a way to raise meat properly that's much cleaner than anything you'll find in the stores. And part of the reason why we're forming this network, there's a lot of other people doing this all across the country. We're big promoters of CSAs, which is Community Supported Agriculture.
Excellent.
We want people who are in town to start connecting with people who grow good food and get it that way. Some people need to eat meat genetically. If they don't, they'll have bone loss. It's just come down to the ancient history. That's just the way it is. So we don't believe in all this stuff. I think that, I mean, I could go into this for another 2 hours on food. That's not really what it's all about, but that's part of it because we care about you.
Right.
And most of the people that are selling you food, they care about profit.
Right. I agree. You know, here's me. I feel like the commercial industry is very barbaric. However, if you raise an animal in the old ways and you bring him to his demise in a loving and kind manner, you know, it's almost like the animal, I don't care what people say. I have quite a bit of empirical evidence to offer. However, we don't have time. But I know that animals read our energy and they know when they're loved. And so when it's time for the animal to move to the next phase, which is, you know, our food, I know it sounds crazy, but I think that the way that we take the animal out is it's
important.
Just healthier because
yeah.
when they're full of fear and, you know, at their demise, we, you know, you are what you eat and all that. So
right.
I think that we eat that meat that's full of the fear and the hormones that flood the meat when...
All right, right. You know, yeah, the meat that we eat, you know, we always say, yeah, I'm not a vegetarian. I will eat other vegetarians. but we only eat animals that we know personally. And we're very careful about it. I mean, we're up at midnight. We're up at 3 o'clock in the morning taking care of these animals. I was loading hay just minutes before I came on the air so that they'll have something to eat. They're a part of our lives. This is a domestic flock. It actually belongs to the church. And we'd like to sell all the meat to people who form congregations. And we'd like to do that all over the country for, you know, where people are going closer to you. So that you get food that's raised properly.
Well, do you have somebody in my area? I'm outside of Atlanta.
I was through Atlanta. There is some people in Atlanta that got a hold of me. He wasn't able to come to the meeting that we had there because there was an accident at home, but I talked to him for a while. But on the Living Network, there are people. I can't keep track of everybody. That's why we created the network. But you can join in the Georgia area. There's a group that covers that, and we'll try to put you with whoever contacts us.
Excellent.
That's really why we started this Living Network. It's really an important part of our service is to connect people who are looking for answers. And you need to do that. We need to learn to stand alone together. And we need to be individuals, but we need to care about others.
Yeah. Excellent.
Now, we'll tell you, Sam, I am now a vegetarian, a vegan. When I stopped eating dairy, my asthma went away after several months.
Well,
when I stopped drinking tea that has caffeine in it, my migraine headaches went away. I feel great not eating meat.
I agree with that.
It's just worked out great for me.
I do.
So, I don't have anything against it.
No, but you were eating probably pasteurized. If you eat actually raw milk, you won't have those issues. But
that's correct. We've had a lot of people who drank. Went to raw milk, naturally produced food, where the cows aren't getting full of hormones. They're actually eating green grass, and their allergies went away. It isn't just milk. It's the milk they give you.
I agree with you there. No problem. But you can get everything you need from plants, because that's what the cow
eats. Most people can, but some people will suffer bone loss if they go to a completely vegetarian diet, because it's just their metabolism. We're not all the same, but it's an individual thing. We're all individuals. But
well, you know, I've been doing pretty well with the bodybuilding, with just the egg, you know, the albumin, the protein. So you know, we're not slaughtering animals to get their protein, and that has done me pretty well. And some really high end cold processed whey products. But, I mean, you know, I'm not sure that I'm quite ready to give up the flesh, and that's because I'm just
step by step.
But I have really, the agenda boys know me. I'm organic as far as my meat and everything, because I know that the grass fed is, you know, they're just more nurtured and they're more they're closer to nature. But still, in all, I'm not assured 100% that they don't meet a scary death, but you know, the actual factory farming is just seems a little more barbaric. But hey, man,
the Bible tells you how to kill them.
Yep. Yep, I'll show you how to do it. You come out. We're having a retreat this year.
We used to do that for Passover. Well, that's the end of our show. Thanks for calling again, Sam. Nice to hear from you again.
Nice to be here.
I think our listeners appreciate hearing from you. You have to tell us your stories. Call in next time. Tell us about your court cases.
Well, I don't have any lately.
That's good news.
But hey.
All right. Well, thanks. And thanks, Shannon, for being on. And thanks, Brother Gregory. Really appreciate it. We enjoyed it. Had a great time.
Yeah, we enjoyed you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, everybody, we'll see you or talk to you next week. And everybody have a good, safe, blessed week. And we'll just appreciate everybody listening. And we'll catch you next week. All right, that's it for tonight. Goodbye.